Hey, this is Gareth Webb, and you are listening to Breakout, a show aimed at cutting through the hiring noise and breaking down best practices. We'll also be tapping into the minds of other industry leaders so you can ensure your business makes the right critical hires the right way.
All right, well, let's kick off today. We're going to do a little bit of a different agenda. We've been getting a decent amount of questions coming in that I wanted to just take some time and dive into those specifically. So I've got a few lined up here that I wanted to fire at you for today. So we'll just do a bit of a longer kind of crowdsourced Q&A. Some of these are a little more like situational. I think we've done a couple of these in the past. So if you need to make a couple of assumptions as you go about and approach and answer for this, like, please feel free. And with that said, we'll dive right into it.
Cool.
Okay. So first question here, we are a relatively new company looking to make two or three, critical director or VP level hires in early 23. How should we begin, or go about beginning the hiring process if we don't have an ATS or like a official recruitment process in place?
How many hires did they say
2 to 3 how many? Director or VP level? So it sounds like maybe open to leveling based on whatever budget they might have open.
And no ATS and no recruitment, so structure or partners.
Correct.
I wouldn't bother with an ATS at all because that's not really worth it for that level of hiring.
Why is that?
I say that based on my view of making a director or VP level hire should categorically be who's the best person out there, best fit, not best person. So, and you stick a director or VP job out into the universe of LinkedIn, job boards, Indeed, you will get a disgraceful amount of inbound that 99% will not be relevant or qualified. Everyone just sees the title and they're like moths to the lamp. And that is the problem with the job boards and with like really, you know, attractive jobs is everybody wants them and they don't think like, have I even got a chance of getting this, doing the job well? It's just the title and money. People don't do a sort of self-check on like, oh, should I really be applying for this? So you'll get an incredible amount of noisy inbound that will slow you down. You'll get people cheering you up for it. If you're a small business without an infrastructure and you're making these hires yourselves, you do not want to have that happen, especially at the beginning of the year, because it will just create lots of noise, lots of headaches, and you'll wish you never did it. People do it all the time anyway, but like everyone wants to chance their arm on the other end of the side of the deal, so to speak, which is like, we might land the absolute perfect person, but the odds are not in your favor. Time and resource drain will impact you materially in your broader business. My advice would be to seek out an agency that you know of, or your investors know, or you like the look of, who approached you, or find some. The position is in your local area, and you need people to be local. It may help to find a more local business. If it doesn't matter, and you're open to remote or distributed, go and find the company that you think fits, and speak to them, and vet them. Run a bit of a process there up front. So I'd take some time to find a partner and have them do it all for you and present you with the best. So how we do things is like, okay, here's the best matches who are A, very, very good and high caliber people anyway, B, a good technical fit and functional fit, C, they have the interest in your business and your product and your stage and all of that stuff works. And then it's like, you should be able to interview 5 to 10 people max, for each position, maybe 3 to 5. And then you will get the answer you're looking for. Hopefully, if you run a slick process, that will save you. It'll cost you more money in the short term. It'll save you so much headache, so much time. You can run that process off a spreadsheet if you need to, rather than an ATS product. The you know, three critical hires should be done with a partner, without tools, without a load of like spend and building an infrastructure out. You should just find the right partner who you feel confident in, who can show you sample profiles, who can, who interpreted your need the right way. You should be able to get all.
If
you start in January, you should be able to get all three hires made by March.
Okay. Would your answer change at all in terms of engaging a partner if the number was, let's just say it's one hire instead? Like, I'm kind of wondering if like, in what scenario or how might you approach a scenario where, a partner is not engaged or kind of, you know, do it on your own.
If it's one hire, I'd still use a partner. If you've never done it before, you're not used to running a process for a director or a VP, and you're all doing your own job anyway, i.e. you're not like a people leader or a talent acquisition leader, I would still use a partner. Yeah, it's like, it doesn't have to cost you anything. You don't need to retain them. You can run your, you could, if you really wanted to, is put an ad out or on LinkedIn and see what comes through. I get hit up daily from people applying to certain positions that we've tested ads out for on LinkedIn because they think it's with us or they think I'm the person making the decision. And I try to be nice and respond, but it's still a time drain. And, you know, that will happen hugely. It's a director or VP role at your business. So if it's one hire, three hires, five hires, if they're all direct to VP level, I categorically go to a partner or partners and get them to show you who they think is best, potentially at no cost until you make the hire. So some people just can't handle the cost. It's like, okay, it's going to cost you, say, 40K per hire times three is 120 grand. Some people can't stomach that. It's an additional salary, right? So it's like, let's not do that. But it doesn't, for most people, it doesn't work very well. And I personally would not do it.
All right. Next question here. I found a great candidate for an open senior director position I have open that I will be extending an offer to. We have a good budget for this role and the candidate has been clear about their compensation expectations throughout the process. But I'm wondering whether I should offer her a package slightly lower than what she initially asked for. The reason being, I presume the candidate will try and negotiate regardless. And this way she'll negotiate up to the salary she initially had asked for rather than the salary above her initial ask. Is this reasonable assumption or am I risking losing a good candidate by doing this? There's probably a few other things you can kind of jump into here too.
So kind of intentionally, say they're intentionally thinking of lowballing, thinking that they're going to negotiate up.
Yeah, get into the range.
It's not really worth it if you really like the person and you're unanimously a yes. Then you've already talked numbers, just offer them what they wanted. And you could stipulate that this is really all we can do. Like, we don't want to like negotiate or lowball you. We don't want you to play this. People are entitled to negotiate whatever. And so negotiating is a skill. And if people are showing that skill, then fair play to them, I think. And so if you say some, for argument's sake, they want 150K and you're like, we're going to offer you all you want, like preemptively, you can preemptively say, look, you know, we're thinking this, does this work for you? Preemptively closing or getting people to say yes, yes, like, I would accept 150. Then the job is done. If they then come back and say, oh, well, I said 150 and now I want 160 because someone else is offering me this, might be annoying, but that's just a game, unfortunately. Like, and people are entitled to do that. So it really depends how you feel. There's other things you can do, like benefits, bonus, stock. So I'd always, depending on what's been discussed, people want to see movement and people appreciate movement. So it's, I know you couldn't get here, but I appreciate you've offered this. We have an offer out at the moment where there was going to be stock. There's not stock now. So they've added some sign-on cash to the offer. And it's not as much as stock would be. They're planning on doing stock later, but it has made the candidate feel that they perceive the value to be there. And so he's like, yeah, I appreciate the gesture to try and like meet me somewhere. So I would always just sound out with people along the way and not leave it to the end. If they say they want X, then offer them X. And try to say, look, can we get this done without playing around? And most of the time that will happen. Some people cannot take a deal without feeling they've negotiated. That's just how deals, like, that's how they do deals in their head. So you just got to, I think, yeah, we've commented on this before. It's like, don't be offended. If people are negotiating, it's how you do anything. It's not what you do, right? So if you negotiate well and it's backed up and it's reasoned, then you're like, I would take 150, but I have this other offer that's come through, which makes me realize I am worth that. I don't, you know, maybe it's 160, 170, 180, but like, I want my overall cash to be increased. So maybe it's like, yeah, you don't have to, it doesn't have to be base. It could be bonus. So yeah, just, I think be prepared for movement, but like if you deliver it well, like we've talked about, you present it line by line, you're confident, you're clear, normally that will help. Yeah, I wouldn't play games. The problem is we're in a market where there's also layoffs and everyone assumes everyone's desperate for a job. And this is not the reality. You know, everyone's in good jobs. If they are not being laid off, then they're probably quite comfortable with where they're at. It's better than going into the unknown.
Cool. This was in a previous episode as well, just around, you said negotiation, but also compensation discussion. And I think your kind of summary was early and often in terms of when this conversation should be happening throughout the interview process.
Yeah, so some of our clients do it really early up front, which can be a little bit blunt. I think like as long as if you don't have a partner like us or a search firm or like an agency, then yeah, you need to have the conversation up front, or somebody needs to say, like, where are you trying to get to? Here's all we've got earmarked for the role. Tell them the number. Or the, you know, again, you cannot ask people what they get paid in many states. So like some people still do that a little bit. I would really advise against that. It's not good practice. And then going into final, pre-final round, pre-final stage, someone should be going through that line by line. Like, where are you at with other things? If you are successful in this round and we give you the nod, like, here's where we think we can get to. How does that work? If you can square all that away prior, so at the end of the, after the final, it's like, hey, the job's yours. Here's the package as discussed. Like, it can be that simple. It's just most people don't do it until right at the end because they're either scared to do it or they don't know how to do it, but they feel comfortable doing it. And that just makes for an awkward offer stage. I think just doing it gradually, continuously is best. And then, yeah, like I said at the end, then you then have to maybe free up some space for movement.
Cool. Yeah, I think there's some helpful tips in terms of questions to ask as you're approaching final stage to get that squared away. Okay, so they actually covered this next question around approaching compensation and negotiations throughout the process. So I won't dive into that one again. This one is another question also kind of around compensation.
Yeah.
I am hiring for various positions and working to create compensation ranges for each of the roles. How do I ensure that the range is in line with current market, but also competitive enough to be able to attract and hire great talent?
Well, how do you index on comp without having the budget to go and buy, like, to know? Or do you mean like, how do you gauge the right comp levels without all the resources and money and tools? Yes. Or how do you compete comp against bigger companies?
Yeah, let's answer both. Let's do one and then the second, if that is helpful.
Yeah, so getting comp details is difficult. Obviously, you can just go to sort of Google, but you'll get all kinds of random numbers. New York and California, I think maybe Colorado, are now having to state the comp front, which is, I believe, a move in the right direction. So you can start there, but obviously then indexing on those locations. There are a bunch of tools that you could use, and you probably get free premium. You know, like there's all these HR platforms and HR tools. I think even ADP and stuff might have one, which are a bit more old school legacy, but you've got Pave. What's the one that you mentioned to me? Lightcast.
Yeah, they're a little bit more Lightcast. Of a data provider, but do have compensation ranges, right, and quite a bit of data from what I've seen.
Yeah, so Pave is the big one that comes to mind. Obviously, Pave. You've got Carter. Pave, Carter. There's a few others as well, like trying to give like better comp details on And then you can talk to talent partners, like recruiters, agencies, search firms. Yeah, we're working on being able to show real-time data on comp for each skill set and position and function and level. So people just, yeah, what people don't like is the varying ranges. So just trying to find a source of truth on like compensation data that's not outdated is very difficult. But there is quite a lot of money being thrown at solving. So I think, yeah, you'd have to probably just aggregate data from different sources. If you're trying to get accurate numbers, is talk to agencies, look on job boards, talk to people, go to some comp product tools, ask for a trial. You could probably get like 90 to 95% of the answer by doing that. That's what I would do. In fact, shout out to Pave and get them to sponsor this, but, Pave pricing. See what they charge. I think they charge like, if you give up, I think you get, it's quite a good model. If you give your comp details to them, then you get money back off comp details elsewhere, which is, so it's like free to sign up for. Hey, request demo. Not very PLG friendly, is it? No pricing. But yeah, I think if you are prepared to like upload your payroll data, then you can get data back with all these providers. That's how they get their data in the first place.
Cool. So in terms of researching comp and finding the market comp, you talked through a few different ways, utilizing states where they're requiring compensation as a range, doing some online research, and then leveraging a few tools. You mentioned ADP, Pave. We talked about Lightcast and then Carta as some tools to initially start exploring. And then engaging in other agencies, search firms, or recruiters to gut check as well. Anything else?
Yeah, like there's you can Google like the state of whatever, and it should be like compensation report. So lots of agencies do that as a way of hooking people into like paywall type content. Not paywall, but you know, like give us your email. Hired used to do a really good yearly comp report, which is like, hey, if you are a Java engineer in Minnesota versus London versus Texas, X number of years. So they had quite a lot of real-time offer beta on that, which is quite useful. So that you should be able to get various salary reports, compensation reports. It's just some of it, even if it's a year or two old, is now out of date because it's all changing a lot. And then company policy around figuring out comps changing, but yeah, you can get close to the answer pretty quickly with agencies, online reports, free tools, talking to people. Yeah, you should be able to get a pretty robust sense of the market. But what I would say is that makes it sound too simple because we talk to companies all the time and they're really way out. So they haven't, they say they've done their homework, but then we're like, no, you are not competitive.
What do you think that is?
I mean, mostly people are out on the downside, so they're just trying to save money, or they're trying to like get too much for what they can afford. So like just titling up roles. So then it's like, well, you can't afford that title. Don't do that. Call it a manager, not two, or then call it a VP. People make up with it with stock. So, I don't know why it's so, it does take time. Like the things I've just told you to do, are probably a few days work. Probably just people don't do. They maybe go to Google for like 10 to 15 minutes. I've looked at Carta's real time comp or Carta total comp, sorry, CTC, their product. And that gives quite a nice like range indicator. Pave, I have not looked. I'm guessing other folks like DEAL, who we've spoken to and are looking to partner up with, they probably have something like, because they run payroll for lots of startups and companies. So yeah, my view is the only way we can get closest range or answer is by taking all the data points and trying to figure out like what's most relevant, but it's quite a big undertaking.
So let's tackle part two, other ways to get creative to attract great talent if you maybe don't have the budget or range that you'd like to be in that you know other competitors might be that are a little more funded or have cash available?
You can't compete if all you're doing is offering, like, everyone's got, you have to find out what your thing is that you can offer, and like, you will get people who want to join a smaller company with less money over a bigger company with more money. It's just, you have to be very, very clear up front, I think, about what you are and what you're trying to do. So if someone joins Google or something now, Meta now, but like, they're always going to be like, hey, yeah, this is great. Big office, big company, big brand, big salary, maybe RSUs. Now that's not the case. At the same time, even when those companies were doing that, there's always a percentage of the population who just don't want, they're like, no, I don't want to go to a massive company and I'd take less cash and more flexibility or more ownership or more impact. We were talking before about culture and like people valuing new ways of doing things versus like just the old guard. Because any of those companies have got real heavy management, right, who are stuck in big legacy pension schemes. So you just have to be very, very clear up front about what you are and what you're not. And that will draw the right people if you push the message out of the way. So you almost have to just not go into that fight. Like, I would never want to get into a fight to outbid somebody on cash, because it means that if that's that kind of a company and we're this company, you're fighting for the wrong reasons. You're somebody should not join highest base possible because they're not incentivized to help you grow or build. So then you go into the incentives of, well, yeah, here you will get stock options and they actually mean something. Yes, they're higher risk, but the payoff will be more versus RSUs. And all that's kind of like happened now this year, isn't it? Where RSUs are meaningless to so many people. I met a guy the other week who's like his stock plan award when he joined the company 2 years ago is like $2.5 million. It's now worth 400K. Like, wow. So, like, we have seen wealth evaporated for many people this year with the stock market taming. But I think, like, if you're trying to like hire more sensibly and you're saying, well, what if someone's paying 200 and we're paying 150, you might struggle, especially if there's not much of a differentiation between the businesses. That's why you then have to like look at everything like, okay, how good are your team at coming across and how well do they get the story across and how bought in do they look when they're interviewing? Because that says a lot about the person interviewing, giving a good experience, being transparent, being friendly, but also showing credibility and being good at what you're doing. Like, all that stuff is super important. So it should not just be that it's about the money. It's about like the positioning of the product, of the company, the role, how well the team interview. Do you make it too easy for people versus too hard? Like, you know, there's lots to it. If it's just a money thing, you'll always lose pretty much. So if you just don't make it about, just be upfront, like, here's what we can offer you. We will never be able to go above this. This is in line with budget. So again, that's one way of gatekeeping and filtering people, which is another good reason to have the comp up.
Great. Okay, cool. So that actually wrapped up on the questions I had saved today. Again, a little bit of a different format, but wanted to play catch up on some of the questions that had been submitted here with us. So I'll leave it with you with the question we always wrap up with. What's one thing you want our listeners to take away from today?
I would say the piece about really leaning into what you are and what you offer, aside from money, I think people really underestimate like how effective that can be as an exercise. And then, you know, making sure that you're really, really blunt upfront about what you are, what you're not, what's likely going to work for you versus just a sell. Like, that is the sell, right? Selling is qualification and making a deal happen with the right people. And it's the same with selling to customers. It's like, you need the right customers. And most people just want to try and force themselves on people. And then you should be pissed off if you lose the right customer or the right candidate, because that should hurt, because you should know like that was very close, but it will happen. And it's the same with us. Like, we don't win every customer, but there's some that we lose, and it's kind of not that big a deal because you're like, well, we've got a few customers like that anyway, or there's signs of like being difficult to work with. But there's some where you're like, they're perfect customer profile. We lost them, that hurt. Like there was one that the other week for me. I think with interviewing, it should be exactly the same. You should dial in very quickly on the right profile and right sort of, does it make sense? Does it fit? Like why they want to join you versus go to a bigger company or a much smaller company or something else? Do they have the traits, the interest, the fit, the personality? And then get that bit done as soon as you can to then sort of refine the kind of assessment. And being, I think we've been quite good at that. We haven't got it right every single time, but being really clear about what we are and what we're not and the challenges, for the most part, it should be done as much upfront as possible. Not just like, hey, it's great to meet you and we're a great company, and then being passive about it. It's like treat the initial part of interviewing or even before that as just like real scrutinized qualification stage. Because you're never going to win the money. So money should be like, hey, look, like money may come and go, but like enjoying your work and being involved in something you can influence or care about or that fits in with your life is really important. I think that's our whole thing, right? Is like at the moment it's much harder for people to decipher where they find that, and asking those questions up front is really important. So yeah, my one thing would be just really dialing into, you know, who you are and who you're not, and how that reflects in your interview process and this, your assessment criteria.
Great. Well, we'll go ahead and wrap up. Before I go, to our listeners, if there are any additional questions that you have or would like answered by Gareth or any other guests that we have on, I'm going to include a link to an email or also to our LinkedIn profiles to submit away, and we can get them added to our queue and answered in a podcast episode upcoming. So with that said, Gareth, as always, it's been a pleasure, and we'll chat next week.
Thanks, Jake.